And we're going to interview Zahra Araz,
mm-hmm.
Kurdish Australian educator, community organizer, and internationalist, and also a strong feminist.
Absolutely. And DJ.
And DJ. Yeah. So, Zahra, would you like to tell us about the international conference that you attended, which was held from February? The 11th to the 15th in Bogota in Colombia.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for that introduction. It was so funny. I was like, am I an internationalist? And when I was there, they were like, absolutely. And I was like, sure. But so basically, I had the most amazing opportunity to go to Abya Yala, which is Latin America. And there was a organization called Women Weaving the Network for Women Weaving the Future, which was basically a collective of women from Kurdistan and from Europe who have basically created a platform for First Nations, grassroots, autonomous organizations that are battling against extractivism, capitalism, colonialism, the patriarchy. And so basically, I, from, you know, the 11th to the 15th, got to go and witness some of the most amazing things that I think that have just like changed my life. And hopefully, you know, we can bring that energy back to Australia and, you know, give a platform, same thing here for women, First Nations, grassroots organizations that, you know, are trying to, you know, get land back, get like, you know, our autonomy back, just, you know, remove ourselves a bit from like the stranglehold that we're currently viewing with imperialism. We're all seeing it right now with US and Israel and Iran. Like, it's, this is the reality of like what happens when, you know, there's an imbalance. And we're seeing ecocide and femicide and, you know, like in the reality, like, you know, it's 170 little Iranian schoolgirls that got blown up on the first day. So that's what we're fighting against right now. So, yeah, I got to go to a conference that went for 5 days that basically was, you know, unraveling and weaving on how we can, you know, combat against these forces at play.
Yeah, wow. That's it's so exciting. And I guess, yeah, just love the energy as well that you bring to your work, Zahra. It's just so encouraging and inspiring for everyone, I think. And speaking of inspiring, can you tell us a little bit about the Rojava Revolution? I think that's a bit of a hot fave topic for you.
To be honest, I never viewed myself as an expert, but I then realised that actually maybe I do know a little bit more about this topic than I give myself leverage for. But I just wanted to quickly just extrapolate a little bit more on the conference, if that's okay. So basically, for the conference, it was what I guess was so special about it was the first day we had a lot of like Mapuche women and First Nations elders, you know, run this conference in a very different way that we're used to seeing here in Australia. So, for example, like the entry was like $35 and it was trans friendly. It was elder friendly. It was parent friendly. Like they had carers for kids. They gave us breakfast, lunch and dinner. It was incredibly accessible. And the first day wasn't, you know, the typical, oh, you know, welcome to our presentation and here's our housekeeping and la, 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 la. No, instead it was like a room full of 400 women, like doing arts and craft together, weaving, like yarning together. And I just felt for the first time in my life, it was quite authentic and it was very human and it created this environment of vulnerability and like human values where we could all actually open up. And it really set the tone for the next 4 days where we did like ceremonial things and, you know, talked about like the seeds of hope and, you know, how we're cultivating women, and that the room was full of like, you know, images of martyrs who have given themselves to the cause and who have fought against the state in terms of state repression, because that's what we're seeing globally. And it was, and there was flowers everywhere and everything smelled beautiful. And I was just like, oh my God, women are the best. Like women know how to set a vibe. They know how to set a mood. And I think that's what we need to be doing here is like creating, you know, this warmth here as well. And banding together and networking together and, you know, doing art together and stuff. Because I know, I think we all look at these things a little bit like they're a bit woo-woo, but actually it does stuff for the soul.
So, yeah, it's a way of connecting before you go into some sort of lecture theatre and listen to maybe one person or a panel speaking at you. So it was a way of everyone connecting. Yeah. Is that what you...
Absolutely, yeah. It just set a different tone. Like, and as an educator, like, I've been to so many conferences that, you know, they're quite sterile, they're very boring, they're very just like, you just sit there and you're passively just taking everything in. And this was the opposite. Like, by the end of the night, we were all dancing together. We basically all got married by the end of the night. Like, it was just, it was so much fun. And then, and then the next few days, like, was just like panels of women, you know, talking about, like, I was listening to this woman from Honduras who was talking about how they got back their land just from, like, just from drumming, just from standing there against, like, militia and paramilitary, just being like, you're not taking my land. In fact, I'm taking my land back. And just, like, showing the strength and, like, and they spoke in such a decolonial, like, divine way. Like, it was just, like, it just made me realize how important our language is and how, you know, we need to learn how to speak like that and speak more engaged with the earth and our own divinity and our own power. So listening to these women talk about, like, how they're saving the rivers, they're saving education, they're saving their mountains, they're fighting for the earth and they're fighting for each other in the most poetic, beautiful ways that, like, we don't ever really engage in, because we've only been exposed to, I guess, military and violence because we're living in a patriarchal society. And then, sorry, I'll just, because I could talk about this forever. And then one thing that was really cool was there was over, I think, 8 to 10 workshops on the fourth day, where we all broke up into little mini groups, and we, you know, people were talking about communications and media and how important, like, independent media is, like what we're doing right now, the fact that 3CR exists and we have a platform and a voice, like, that we need to start engaging more in this stuff and, like, you know, creating our own curriculum. As an educator, for me, the amount of content that I've made independently, because it doesn't exist, because the government doesn't want our students to have truth telling. They don't want us to, like, they're doing it on a very surface value, but, like, is what are we actually teaching our future generation? Because for me, I grew up just learning about Captain Cook and the gold rush, and I had no idea what was going on. I had to educate myself on the fact that we're living on stolen land and we're not giving platforms to First Nations people. So, you know, I had to, like, go out there, engage with, like, you know, Uncle Robbie Thorpe and go to Crime Scene Australia and go to Camp Sovereignty and decolonize myself. And, like, and that's what we want for our students. And this is what this conference was doing. That's what we're trying to get people to engage in. So, yeah, it was phenomenal. It was beautiful. And it was a dream. And I want to do that so much here. And if there's anyone listening who wants to, you know, connect with me and try and create, like, a women's group or like, you know, something similar, come talk to me and let's, like, weave the future together, please.
Wow, that's so beautiful. Look, actually, Zara, I really appreciate how rogue we've gone, and this is just so necessary, because, like, sometimes I think we can end up so robotic about how we go about things, and we miss the why, we miss the, like, the human side, which is we are all human beings and we're meant for connection, and we're meant to live in a world where that fosters positive, healthy, supportive, warm, caring relationships.
Absolutely.
And it's the only kind of socialism that's worth fighting for, in my view.
Absolutely.
So, but yeah, like, yeah, so I appreciate so much you sort of sharing that, and just how it's like, I mean, it's just sort of expanded your thinking as well, just being in the presence of other people who's sort of going on that journey. But it speaks to just how, it's not just like the systems themselves need changing, but it's also, it's about deconstructing and decolonizing our own ways of relating to ourselves as well, and language and things like that. And that's just so equally important. So thank you for making that so explicit. And I mean, and maybe, you know, with the things like the Rojava Revolution, like, I imagine, and just even, you know, engaging with some of the music that you shared with me last night when we're sort of preparing for this show, and it made me realize just how, you know, vibrant and how beautiful Kurdish culture is. And just, I mean, most, you know, lots of different cultures are so beautiful, and there's so many strengths and things that are worth fighting for and protecting for. And so, yeah, I can imagine, you know, when, you know, those women and men and, you know, people in between, everybody are coming together to, you know, try and protect their homeland and their culture. Like, it comes from a place of love, and it also comes from, that deep history and understanding that they have. And yeah,
thank you. That's so sweet. Thank you.
Yeah, no worries. What else would you like to, while you're here in this studio, what else would you like to share with our listeners?
So basically, if we're so connecting to Rojava, one thing, so a lot of the women who I met allegedly may have or may not have gone to Rojava. I cannot confirm or deny that information. but it was, I guess, so Sue Bolton asked me a really interesting question a couple of weeks ago. She said, you know, what is the future of Rojava? And I guess before I expand on what Rojava is, I just want to tell listeners, like, the Rojava is, you know, and it's an experiment. It's an idea. It's an ideology that's been, you know, created, that's based and rooted in a women's revolution, that it's really driven to the core of it by women, for women. And Sue was asking me what the future of it is. And I explained to her that ultimately, it's an ideological experiment. It's an idea, and what we hope to do is create lots of, you know, mini Rojavas all around the world, and that we plant these seeds and we cultivate them, and they grow, and they'll sprout like beautiful flowers everywhere. So, Rojava is basically, for those who don't know, it's a part of Kurdistan, and it's basically, legally, in terms of borders, it's within the borders of Syria. But Rojava is a really special place because it's an experiment that has been able to be cultivated without, I guess, intervention from the Syrian government. So basically, in 2011, we saw the fall of the Assad regime. And what that created was this empty space, where people suddenly could create their own government. And basically, we found ourselves watching a group of people with the, you know, values of, you know, women, that the women are going to be the ones who are going to basically fix things. So we found that, you know, we've got a women's military, the YPJ, where women have learnt how to, you know, defend their bodies and defend their land. And then I'm sure lots of listeners had seen, you know, the women of Kobani, you know, fighting against ISIS and, you know, liberating the Yazidi women who were, like, you know, being, you know, sex slaves and tortured and all the horrible things that we were seeing come out of there. And it just goes to show how important it is to educate women, and also to, I'm not pro-violence, but ultimately we need to also arm ourselves to protect ourselves, because these are the realities that happen when you're dealing with, you know, paramilitaries. And I know this isn't something we have in Australia, but globally this is something that women need to actually do, unfortunately. We also saw from Rojava these amazing towns called Jinwa. Jinwa is a women's town, and basically no men are allowed, sorry. But yeah, there was a space for women who have experienced domestic violence or oppression, and it was a safe space where women could become educated and learn, you know, different skills and create these co-ops and basically, you know, protect each other and, like, cultivate, like, their own food and, you know, support each other with their children. And I just thought, like, wouldn't that be amazing to have everywhere, all around the world, these little women town where we're all just protecting each other and just having a nice, safe time.
Yeah. Well, it's funny, isn't it? Because, like, you kind of think about, like, before colonization here, that's really what was happening for most First Nations women. They were doing exactly that. And, yeah, and just how much, yeah, like, capitalism, I mean, obviously, patriarchy predates capitalism, but it's, yeah, it very much disrupts the natural relationships that we would otherwise have.
Absolutely. Yeah. So Rojava is basically the women's revolution, and I think there's a lot in there that I highly recommend listeners to go out and, like, you know, engage in and study and listen to, because it's I know that there's lots of different opinions on it, but I think ultimately this is a women's cause, and that we need to actually start putting our, you know, energy into women, because ultimately I think we're really going to clean up some of the mess that we're seeing right now. And we can do that here in terms of, you know, fighting against extractivism here, against mining corporations, and, you know, supporting First Nations women here, because there are lots of women down at Camp Sovereignty, or like Lydia Thorpe, that like need our support, that like, you know, need our voices, and we need to show solidarity.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So, excuse me. So, one question was, why do you think Rojava is under attack? But I think that's sort of really clear why. It's such an example. But
yeah, like, well, basically we're getting attacked from all sorts of things, whether that's the patriarchy, because, you know, we've got ISIS and we've got the Turkish government, we've got the Syrian government, we also have the US government that, like, you know, doesn't want to see a socialist experiment, succeed. Like, we was watching what they're doing to Cuba, we're watching what they're doing right now. And ultimately, no one, unfortunately, in the patriarchy wants to, like, see this idea flourish and succeed, because it's showing that there is actually a different way of living and engaging with the world. So why is Rojava under attack? Why are women under attack is really the main question. Is this like because they want us to be repressed? They don't want us to be educated, and they don't want us to have self-determination and autonomy, because that's really what this town is about. That's why we're seeing Rojava under attack. It's so much more. But also, like, if you look at the, like, if I'm going to get into a scientific thing, like, and stuff, like, based on where it is with the Turkish border and stuff, there's lots of different plays in terms of, like, you know, military ground and stuff and water, and it's very complicated. But I also, whilst you guys are all listening, definitely look into genealogy, which is the science of women, and it's this Kurdish idea of, you know, studying women and looking into ideas of, like, Jinjian Azadi, which is woman, life, freedom movement. I highly recommend that you guys go investigate that. Cause
how do you spell that?
Jin, as in J-I-N, so woman, and then Jian, which is J-I-N-Y-A-N, which is freedom. And then, that's life. And then Azadi, A-Z-A-D-I, which is, I think I did that well. And then, which is freedom. So woman, life, freedom movement. And this was actually a term coined by Ocalan, who is one of the fighters against, I guess, repression. And he's currently in prison right now. And lots of people are trying to get him out of prison right now. But yeah, that was a term coined by him.
Yeah. What a beautiful conversation. Zara, and I know that you're going to go and do some more study or learn a bit more as well about Democratic Confederacy. So I propose that we get you back in here for maybe part two, and we'll talk about that in a bit more detail, because I'm so keen to learn more of the ins and outs of that as an alternative to capitalism and the current terrible system that we have. So, but maybe we might go to perhaps a little break, because we'll have an interview coming up shortly.
Yes, we might have to do a quick condensed activist calendar, and then we're going to be to Katerina Sinani, who's the candidate for secretary for the members' first ticket for the United Workers Union. And they're running a staunch campaign. And
Speaking of democracy, that's democracy in action and people power fighting back. So that'll be a great interview coming up. Let's have a break and then the activist calendar.